Hey guys. How are you doing?
This is Zach.
And Stuart.
And this is episode 20 of the Back Row Super Show, the main show.
Yep, this is where we talk about specific topics.
Yes.
And what is our topic for today?
Our topic is games mastering, or being the leader of make-believe land.
Yeah, this is when you are... Wow, that's a good one. Zach never tells me these... the alternative titles.
Yeah.
So I'm always surprised when he comes up with good ones. And he usually does come up with good ones. Yes, you are god of this domain that you do. So let's get straight into it. We're going to mainly be talking about, Pathfinder, D&D, a lot of these other particular ones. But we will get into some, like, LARPing, being a storyteller.
Yeah.
Which is a lot different than actually game mastering, GM or DMing.
Yeah.
Dungeon mastering.
So, I guess first off,
experiences?
You know, there's different... Well, yeah, so there's different ways of designing the world for the game that you're in. And you don't have to design it.
You don't.
There's different techniques. Generally, when I've played before, I always like kind of coming up with relations of things. Of like, say, if it's a fantasy game, the races.
Mm-hmm.
And the history of the races. And relaying that to players so that they know when they're designing backstories for their characters, they can kind of draw from that and kind of be part of the world.
Yeah.
Because
there's really, I think, three main ways of putting together an adventure.
Yeah.
So the first one is probably the easiest for the DM or GM, and that's getting a module. Getting a pre-made module from, you know, either the Pathfinder Society, the Adventure League, or probably off the Roleplay's website.
Yeah, and modules have different campaign settings. So, like, Pathfinder's world, I think, is called Galarian.
Mm-hmm.
So anything in Pathfinder Society is going to take place in Galarian.
Yes.
Most of these
modules will be, self-contained. They will be able to basically harp back to a main world. So they're not, like, separate from each other. I know that the Adventure League, they do, like, seasons, I think. Pathfinder also does seasons.
Yeah.
Where it's a particular region of the main world.
Yeah. And so, you know, another thing with campaign settings would be, you know, if you're doing D&D, I think the one that they're using now is Forgotten Realms.
Yeah.
Which has a whole history and a set of books around it.
Mm-hmm.
For a while, Dragonlance was a campaign setting. Campaign settings are basically the rules by which the history of the game world goes, if that makes sense. So, you know, Mystara was another early D&D one, Greyhawk. Mm-hmm. They all had histories and these major avatar type characters running through them.
Yeah.
To kind of create a facsimile of a real world history.
Yeah, they're all, it's like the Marvel Universe, where they're all tied together. You would hear a name of a particular deity or hero, and you know, oh, that hero is from a different module, or maybe that's from a different land, but they're all tied together.
Yeah, so, like, the main way that I've run games in the past, though, like, I've never...
Oh, so, yeah, that was one way, is doing a module.
The second way
is coming up with a universe or world yourself. So this is the extreme of the module, where it's on the other side of the coin, where you are making up the world.
I would say this is in the middle.
Oh, really?
Honestly, I have, yeah. Okay. So I've only ever come up with stuff my own, on my own, really. Mm-hmm. Like, I've never used campaign settings. So, like, you could do something like, I had a game world once where, because elves were so long-lived, the majority of elves were evil, and so they were these genetic scientists, they had access to magic, They were kind of Well, I mean, they were ultra-fascist. They had a way for the world to go, and that was the plan it was going to go on. Right. And because they had access to magic, they could do whatever. I had another world where, and because it's so modular, like we were talking about in the last main episode for Pathfinder.
Yeah.
It was a D20 system. I can't remember if it was D20 or Pathfinder, but instead of using the elf stats for characters, mm-hmm. elves used the gnome stats.
Huh.
And so they were like Keebler elves. Yeah. Instead of, like, Tolkien elves.
Tolkien elves, yeah. The long, lengthy elves.
Yeah. So you can do that. It can be as simple as going, elves are not going to be in this game at all.
Yeah. I mean, really, it's your world to create. It's your world to make up. And again, that takes a lot of time. You're going to be sitting down and sort of writing out particular countries, particular conflicts, particular races, or, as you said, absence of races. Yeah. The nice thing about this approach is you can really let the characters fill in a lot of your blanks. Yeah. So you can let the character sort of run with a backstory. So if a if a player comes with a character who has a backstory and you didn't really plan for it, you can insert it into your world without much difficulty. Where if you had a character who had a background that wasn't unique to a module, it would be kind of hard, and that character's background would probably just be blank because it would never come into play.
Yeah. So another way of doing this would be like, you know, with the GM kind of sketching out a general world and the kind of having the players' characters kind of help fill in the blanks, like you're saying.
Oh, yeah.
Just in small bits here and there. Mm-hmm. Some systems that are really good at doing that would be Burning Wheel, for one.
Yes.
Because characters, when the players design their characters in Burning Wheel, core to their characters are beliefs and instincts.
Yep.
And so you can have characters start role-playing just right out of character creation because maybe two characters' beliefs go against each other.
Yeah.
But that also colors the world a little bit. One that does it a little bit better would be in terms of world building, rather than character building, would be Dungeon World.
Okay.
Dungeon World is a Powered by the Apocalypse system. At the table, I think it says in the rules that there can only be one class of a thing at least once.
Interesting.
So you can only have one ranger. You can only have one wizard. You can only have one thief, right?
Okay.
And you kind of cobble together your characters there, but the character relationships are built by going, depending on the character class, I know blank character because we did blank, right? Yeah. And so it fills in a character background. It might allude to something larger in the world.
Yeah, which is also similar to a game that we played, Dresden Files, where you have to, once you create your character, pick another character and kind of come up with a backstory with that character. And then that character has to choose somebody else.
Yeah.
And build a background, sort of like a book, since, you know, the Dresden Files, the role-playing game, is based off the book. You're coming up with, like, a book or an adventure, where you met this other person.
Yeah.
Which really interconnects everybody in the group.
Yeah. Another one would be 13th Age. It's designed by Jonathan Tweet, who did 3rd edition D&D. And Rob Hinesu, who did 4th edition D&D.
Okay.
So it's more cinematic, more like 4th edition.
Yeah.
Characters design one unique thing about themselves that colors that world.
Yeah.
So, like, you could have a halfling fighter who their one unique thing is, I'm the last remaining dragon guard. And they come up with whatever the dragon guard is.
But yeah.
Like, because it's not a mechanical benefit. It just helps flesh out that world.
Yeah, and that's one of the biggest things, is when you are going to set up a game, you really want your players to help you set up that game. It's not a sole thing that you're going to do where you are going to build this world.
Yeah.
You want your characters to be integrated into this world, so they feel like they have investment.
Right.
Because there's nothing worse than having a character there who's not invested, who's basically just there to play and fight and not really be invested in the story, because that's a big component of role-playing is the story.
Yeah. Now, the third way of designing your world,
mm-hmm.
and this is where I say this is the exact opposite of campaign settings,
yeah.
would be collective world building,
okay.
In which the players and the GM work in equal amounts determining the game world. So, like, an example of this would be there's a game called Microscope where you're determining the history of a world, and you use index cards to define certain characters and stuff. That it's very, very fiddly. It's very well balanced and really good. I would use it in conjunction with a game. Like, I would have it be a session zero thing of this is the world we're in. This is what we're doing. Dawn of Ages is a free supplement that you can buy, or not buy. Not a free thing that you can buy. You can get it online. It's just Dawn of Ages. There's three ages to the world you're making. The first age, and it's a point buy thing. So everyone takes turns going, okay, well, I want there to be a mountain range here. And the values change based on which age you do them. So, like, in the first age, it's very easy to make geographical changes.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very expensive to create civilizations and races. Okay. In the second age, it's easier to create races.
Mm-hmm.
But geographical changes are a little bit harder to do.
Yeah.
Civilizations are super hard. In the third age, civilizations and machinations and wars and stuff are easy to come up with. Geographical changes are almost impossible, and as are races, sub-races, stuff like that.
Interesting.
Coming together.
Because my third one, which I guess would be on the flip side of the coin, is doing very improv.
On the fly.
On the fly, where you have a world, but it's a loosely built world.
Yeah.
It's, you have just a couple of keywords, a couple of cities, and you leave a lot of things blank, and as you're playing the game, that's when you do all of your world building. Mm. It's hard. It's something I don't recommend. I do prefer probably the middle one, where you're there building the world, and you're having your players help you build that world. I will say the improv one is more for loosely based games, like Everybody is John, other...
I would say it's also better if you're playing like a campaign-style game and not a one-shot.
Yeah.
It's probably better for more advanced GMs and players.
Yeah, yeah. The more improv one is good for one-shots, where you're not going to be revisiting this world, so... Yeah. There's not as much.
Chew bubble gum.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of these one-page role-playing games are probably better for that improv thing. Because, again, you're not trying to focus more on the game. Because it's only going to be a one-shot. You're just trying to do character interactions and conflict resolution.
Yeah. So I guess that brings us to ways to design game or design an adventure, basically.
Yeah.
And this would be obviously not using a module. This is if you're making baby's first adventure.
Yeah.
The first way would be to...
I would highly recommend, if this is your first time DMing or this is your first time playing a role-playing game, you might want to shoot for a module first.
Mm-hmm.
Just because it's a lot simpler.
Yes.
It's something that doesn't take as much investment. Because you might play or DM a module and realize, hey, I don't really have fun DMing. I would like somebody else to do that. I would prefer being a player. And you wouldn't have all the time that you invested building this world because you have just gotten a module. So I highly recommend do a module first if it's your first time DMing. But if you have a couple of, you know, times under your belt,
yeah,
then world building is probably one of the better ones.
Yeah, yeah. Now, with adventures, if you're making your first one up and you're not doing modules,
mm-hmm.
You can make a railroad or a gauntlet-style adventure.
Yeah.
The downside of that is that it takes autonomy away from your players.
Yeah.
Because you're very blatantly wanting them to, you know, kill the bishop, yeah, or, you know, take this thing from the pedestal.
And modules really do railroading, yeah, where you, if you decide that you want to do something that's not written in the module or in the book, you really can't do it. So it does take away decisions from players.
Yeah. Something else that you could do would be forks and branches, where, you know, based on how your characters react with certain NPCs, you could have, well, if they do X, then Y happens. If they do Z, then A happens.
But it's always super hard to determine what your players are going to do. Because, yeah, they might find another option that you didn't consider.
That happens all the time.
It does happen all the time. Another big thing is, like, don't get, like, super devoted to a character that you created. Like, let's say you have a big baddie that you spent time on, you know, putting out the stats, making sure that he was well-balanced to fight against everybody in the group. Well, they might not take the bait on him and might do something else. Don't think that, oh, because I put all this time and investment in this one character creating them, they need to fight him and then try to, like, push them towards them.
Yeah. I mean, I've had situations before where, and because a lot of interactions don't pin a lot of stuff on a fight, because I've had situations before where, because it's all chance, I've had this bad guy, a big run up to this big bad evil guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was you and a couple of other people, based on some lucky crits that you guys got and some fumbles that I had,
mm-hmm,
this big bad evil guy that was gearing up to fight or whatever, the fight was over in like 3 rounds.
Yeah.
Like, it was a letdown. Don't pin certain things happening on a fight.
Yeah. I mean, and that kind of leads to another thing where you have to sort of know the players. Usually you will know the players. If you're starting up a game, you'll get your friends to come and play.
Yeah.
And you'll know sort of what they want to play. Because really, you're there to, you want to entertain yourself, but you want to also entertain them.
Yeah.
So you want to try to focus more on what they enjoy. Be it combat, if your friends are more into, like, fighting and hacking and slashing and things along those lines, you'll want to put in more combat because they're going to have fun doing that.
Yeah.
If your players want to have more role-playing time, or they want to have more interactions with NPCs and they really want to build up that character interaction, then plan for that. I know it's kind of hard to figure those things out the first couple of times you play with them, but as the session keeps on going further and further, you'll realize what they lean towards. And those aren't the two only options. Maybe they really want to do, like, skill checks and, yeah, stuff like that. So,
yeah. I mean, there's a lot of ways to do it. The third way to design an adventure is just making it up as you go along, a.k.a. sandboxing.
So this is hard. I mean, this is difficult because you, yeah, have to have an overall theme. So,
yep,
you know, your theme might be a god king is trying to take over a particular land that's ruled by the dwarves.
Yeah.
And you have that ambiguous thing, and then you'll let the characters run the ship. May it be them trying to kill the God King or find out why he's a god.
Or maybe they end up helping the God King.
Yeah, or maybe they fuck off with the whole entire thing and they decide that they're going to help this one guy and his horse.
Yeah, like, it's very difficult with Sandbox. Like, there are very few systems, I think, that are good for just complete freeform. Well, like, you have to have because if your characters pick a fight with someone, you have to either make up stats on the fly.
Well, this is the great thing, is a lot of these newer systems will have pre-gens, characters, and you can usually pick out a person who's already been, you know, generated and use him as the person if they pick the fight.
Yeah. But yeah, no, so like, no prep. Just improv is very difficult to do. Like, I think I've
done it a couple times.
Yeah, like, I've done it a couple of times. Yeah. It's very difficult.
It's a hit or miss thing.
It's
because you'll see your players, like, realizing that you have shit.
Yeah.
That you don't have anything prepared. And some players don't like that. Like, they'll be like, oh, so you're just kind of making shit up. And you're like,
well, I mean, that's what we're all doing when we play these on one hand.
Yeah, true.
I mean, because, yeah, like, and, you know, being a GM is difficult.
It is, because you have to balance out a lot of things. The biggest thing that you have to balance out is just player time.
Yeah. Yeah, player time, which, you know, I guess goes into, you know, comfortable length of sessions.
Yeah.
I know, generally speaking, I like sessions to be 3 to 4 hours.
Yes, 3 to 4 hours is usually the optimal time. A lot of modules will be only for 4 hours.
Yeah.
But it's really difficult to determine that time with modules because you may have more people in your party. And when you have more people in your party, things drag out.
Yeah, I mean, I know when I first started playing these things back in, like, 5th or 6th grade, you know, during the summers, me and a few friends would, like, take turns sleeping over at each other's houses over the course of, like, a week. And basically just play, like, 16-hour sessions of D&D, and it was...
Well, you were a kid back then.
Yeah, like, now we're adults. Like, it's impossible to do that. Like,
if I was DMing... I would get very tired and parched, you know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
After talking and stuff like that. And you just, it's a mental strain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, now it's a mental strain because I'm not as easily entertained now. So, like, I want to be more involved.
Yeah.
And
with your players, like, you can gauge the entertainment that they're having. Because the main goal of playing, role-playing, is for everybody to have a good time.
Yeah.
And if you're realizing that somebody's not having a good time, be it their character isn't what they expected it is, or the story isn't enticing enough to get people interested, or if you're the DM and you've just mentally checked out because you're done, you've reached that, you know, that threshold of I'm tired, then your other players aren't going to have fun and you just need to finish the session. Which ends up going to another thing of what would be... So, Zach, what would be your optimal number for a party if you were DMing?
Oh, of players?
Of players, yeah. Because
I like...
What's your high end? What's your low end? And then what's your happy medium?
Low end would definitely be 2.
2? Yeah, not including yourself.
Not including myself. Yeah, like 2 players.
Yep.
Highest that I've ever run before was 10, and that was in second edition.
Oh, I feel
D&D.
Yeah.
Comfortable amount of time, like, for people to not get bored in between everyone else's turn, I would say between 3 and 5.
Okay.
Like 5, yeah, well, maybe 4 and 5. That's generally the happy spot I've found. Yeah. Because 10 people is just...
That's ridiculous.
Super involved.
I don't know how you would do 10 people. Eight's my max, and eight's pushing it. Like, I think 7 or 8 people is too many people, yeah. Because your turns are long, you lose a lot of focus, a lot of people don't have, or can't come to an agreement yeah. on what they want to do, so you, God forbid, split the party, and it's not even it's not a player thing of splitting the party,
yeah.
It's a DM thing, because now you're trying to DM 2 separate events,
yeah.
Which is super hard.
It's super difficult,
So
you get a lot of players looking at their phones,
yeah.
and not engaging.
And not engaging. And because, again, yeah, you want them to be engaged. So, really, 8 would be my limit. I find a happy medium at 4. And then 2's okay. It really depends if these are, like, good friends. Because if they're good friends, you guys all know each other.
Yeah.
And you can play pretty fast, and you can kind of figure things out.
I mean, it
family, but if it's, like, 2 random people...
Yeah, well, like, just... when we see my family for holidays, like, my parents don't really, like... They don't want to play role-playing games.
Yeah.
But, like, I'll run a game for my brother and my wife.
Yeah, and that's fine, because they know each other. They know their play style. They know each other,
and usually what'll happen is I will do the thing that I really don't like it when lots of other people do.
Don't tell me. You make your
DMPC?
Yeah.
But I
so that's when a DM has its own personal character.
Right.
Yeah.
Now,
so they're doing double duty. They're being a character and playing as the GM.
So the thing that I do is I as the PC in the game that I'm running, never suggest what we do. Never have any decisions to, like, I always defer to one of the players, because it's very easy, because you're running the game and also having a player character there, to just go, I know what we should do, and then lead the players by the nose, which is no fun.
It
mainly
is not.
It's there to balance out because this is 5th edition D&D,
yeah.
And it's just there to balance out combat without making it boring.
You see, my preferred, I guess, resolution to that is let the player play 2 characters. I know it's a little bit more difficult because the player is managing 2 characters.
Yeah, you've got to have a more advanced player for that system.
But the thing is, you're managing a character and you're DMing, which is even more difficult because you're running the game. And
it's just one more character there.
Yeah. But the thing is, like, that character isn't supplying anything. It isn't, like, adding anything to the table, because he's blank-faced man who occasionally punches things. Like, does the guy have a personality?
Yeah.
No, not really.
No, not really.
Yeah. So my solution, and I've seen it done, well, is usually, if you have 2 people, let somebody run an additional character, or let both of the characters run 2 characters and just have 4 players.
Yeah.
Because I really do feel like most of the major role-playing games, the sweet spot is 4.
Yeah.
That's really the sweet spot. Mm-hmm. 5's kind of pushing a little bit, but 4 is definitely what I enjoy.
Yeah.
Especially DMing. I enjoy 4 characters.
Yeah. And like Stuart said before, I do not recommend using a DMPC. A lot of times that goes off the rails very, very easily.
Yeah. And, I mean, because some DMs get attached to that character, because you do get attached to your characters, and then that character becomes a little bit more powerful. Because he's DM protected.
I might be a heartless monster, because I really don't give 2 shits about
any of your characters?
Any of my... Oh, well, no. If I am also running... Like, I just treat it as an NPC. Like, I don't give 2 shits about that character.
Yeah, but, I mean, it's easy for yourself to kind of slip into caring for that character. It kind of is. Because, I mean...
I must be a heartless monster, because I don't care.
Because, I mean, people really do get, like,
I know what you're saying, though, because I've been in a situation, again, back in 2nd edition D&D, where it's, I normally play this character, but I'm going to run this game for you guys, and my character's going to be here, and he's 10 levels higher than everyone else, and he does all the good shit.
Well, I mean,
it's not
me,
fun.
You, and your wife, and a couple other people were playing with this one guy who was DMing, who also had his character. And his character was, like, extremely overpowerful. And it just, it wasn't fun because, like, his character was wiping the floor while our characters was basically cleaning up after his mess. Yep. And I would rather try to figure things out and eventually lose, maybe, than having a GM's powerful character solve things for me.
Yeah.
It's not
like,
fun.
Because that's not fun.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. So
I guess you should also determine with your group, once you figured out what group size you're comfortable running for.
Yeah, and what kind of style you're going to use.
Yeah, whether you want to do roleplay or hack and slash.
Yeah, because and you can always find the balance of it, but usually there will be a consensus with your characters or with your players after you play a couple of times that you find that, they lean more towards fighting. That's where they have the most entertainment, is them trying to plan out a strategy on a board. Oh, I highly recommend a grid-based board. It makes a lot of things easier for at least D&D and Pathfinder.
Yeah, I mean, some Pathfinder, games, I don't know how you could do it without a hex.
I don't know either. There are some games that are theater of the mind, where you're just imagining things.
First and second edition D&D.
Yeah. Really, Burning Wheel, you don't really need a...
Burning Wheel, Dungeon World.
Yeah, things like that. So if you're playing a system that uses a board, you'll definitely need one of these grid base with dry erase markers.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you'll find out that your party is more leaning towards fighting versus leaning towards role-playing. And I've seen a lot of styles of different role-play. I know that we prefer, when we're role-playing, we talk as our character.
Yes.
So instead of saying, my character says, blah, 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 it's like, no, you talk to me as if you were your character, and I will talk to you as if I was that PC.
Yeah.
Or NPC.
Yeah. It can get confusing if you're asking the DM a question, or the GM a question.
Yeah.
Which is why you have to come up with hand signals. Like, I know some people who put a fist on top of their head.
That's weird.
As they're talking. I know our group has always done the OOC with our hand shape over our chest.
Yeah.
To signify it's out of character.
Yeah. Because it's fun, because when people are talking, they'll usually say their initial thing. And, I mean, and that's what their character would say, and it's sometimes the consequences that they've had to deal with.
Yep.
But,
It's
But I find it a lot more fun.
It's more engaging, definitely.
And it's that whole theater aspect where you are actually acting as your character. You are, you know, if your character might have a lisp or maybe a accent or something, it gives you an opportunity to try out your acting chops.
Yeah. Oh, accents are key, almost. Like, I remember we were playing a... There's a system called Gearkrieg that's set during World War II, but with, like, mechs and steampunk weapons and Tesla rays and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I had a character who was a French resistance member, so I talked in a French accent. And if I was out of character, I would just speak
normal,
in a regular speaking voice.
I mean, and it's fun. It gives you an entertaining... Because maybe you don't have the greatest French accent, but you're trying.
But it's
and
fun.
It's funny, and it's entertaining, and everybody's going to enjoy that throughout the table because it adds more energy and liveliness to a role-playing session.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I know I like a good mix of role-play and combat, but I'm definitely more... I prefer roleplay because hack and slash at some point just becomes, okay, I'm going to take one imaginary number and then I'm going to roll this dice, and then the higher that is, the better.
Yeah.
And why bother playing a game if you're just rolling a die?
You're basically playing a board game.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You're playing a board game. I want to play a role-playing game.
Yeah. So it is a unique balance between having combat and having role-playing experiences. I will say that with, like, Pathfinder Society or Adventure League, you are going to lean more towards fighting.
Yeah.
Because, again, most of these leagues, it's not the same people that show up time after time.
Yeah.
You're going to get different parties, which, you know, unfortunately leads to people really can't talk about their background, because you can talk about it to somebody, but that person's not going to show up next time to either act or do something regarding your background. So it's a lot of just fight, 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 move to the next thing, maybe make some skill checks, fight, 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 rinse and repeat.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I do enjoy those adventure leagues and the society for their accessibility to new people.
Yeah.
But I do prefer more of the custom shared world where you're playing with your friends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And something you brought up earlier when we were discussing this was the feelies that you can include in the game, which feelies are just like physical things you can include in the game.
Yeah, like I was playing a game where we ended up getting to a bar, and there was a guy who was basically playing a game of quarters where you hit a quarter on the table and try to get into a drink. And instead of actually rolling for our particular characters, the DM had brought the physical game with him. So, in person, we all tried doing that particular game, which was a lot of fun because, you know, we're all four trying to do it. We're laughing at our failures and cheering for our successes. And it's a lot funner than just, like, rolling dice. Which, you know, if you can incorporate something physical that your players can do to sort of bond that group, more power to you, and I highly recommend it. Also, another good, tool for your toolbox in DMing is be descriptive when you're actually talking about a certain scene or a certain person. Be as descriptive as you can, because, again, you're building the story for a person. One of the senses that I notice that a lot of people leave off is the sense of smell. So when I'm actually DMing a game or something like that, I like to put olfactory descriptors in.
Yeah.
So if, you know, somebody smells bad, or if the dungeon reeks of a certain fish or something like
that. Yeah, I mean, instead of saying you round the corner in the cave, why not say, you know, as you're walking through the cave, you can smell moisture in the air. It feels humid.
There are some
lag. You feel a slight breeze. You see your torch wavering
as
following the breeze. Like, you just be descriptive of what the characters are experiencing.
Yeah, so it's a good use, or it's a good tool for you to be as descriptive as possible. Because, you know, somebody's imagination could be imagining something way different than what you expect. And then it gets into that conflict of, oh, well, I thought you said that, you know, this was a hot desert area. That's why I took off my shirt or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. Other examples of feelies would be like if you take the time to make a map for the players to look at.
Mm-hmm.
You like using coffee to stain it and discolor it and make it look used or burn it or whatever. One of the things I've done before with, I think it was Lady Blackbird.
Oh yeah.
I had which Lady Blackbird is a free game online. You can look it up. I think
it's good.
It's John Harper.
Yeah, it's really good. I enjoyed playing it.
It's really, really good. You can play it for longer than the prescribed 3 or 4 sessions. But basically, I was running the game, and
that was a module.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, that's like a module. There's a prescribed order of events that are there, or you can spin it out into its own thing if you want. It's basically Firefly, but...
Or you could play the module and then continue with your own, you know...
Yeah, but plan. I knew that I wanted this to end after a certain point, and so I had... Lady Blackbird ostensibly is an NPC. It's a way for the DM to connect to the players. So I had her... I had a good feeling that something was going to happen in the adventure that would make her decide to kill herself. And so I had her... I rewrote in the character a letter to... I think it was your character. Was it your character?
Yeah, because I was trying to romance her.
Right. Okay. So I wrote a letter to his character in the character of Lady Blackbird, and I really liked it because... I handed you the letter because that was where it was, and you read it and didn't say anything to the other
impactful,
players.
Very impactful, yeah.
Yeah.
It was extremely impactful, which is really, taking these, like, these props or these particular items that you can use is a great motivator, and it really touches a lot of the players and makes them connected to the world.
Yeah, and like you were saying about describing more, you can add... to the atmosphere as well by, I know in the past with like D&D, I've done things that don't necessarily give a mechanical benefit, but if I'm trying to ratchet up the tension just a little bit, sometimes I'll ask a certain character to, hey, make a perception check.
Yeah.
And they make a perception check. The number doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Nothing's coming up. I just want them to get a little bit more tense. So I just go, okay. And I make it seem as if they failed.
Yeah.
You can communicate a lot by just asking them to do something or say, hey, make a sense motive check on whoever.
Yeah. And it's the red herrings that you can throw.
Exactly.
And just sort of make things more... unique and interesting, because that's what you're mainly doing as a DM. You're trying to make the story interesting and make the world some place or something that people want to go back to. Also, another good tool is using music. I remember we were playing World of Darkness, and you guys went into a club. And I had a bunch of club music playing, and
Sandstorm, if I remember right.
Maybe, yeah. it does sound like something I would do. And I was trying to get that atmosphere of a noisy club.
Yeah.
So I played it louder than usual on my speakers, and they had this sort of like yell at each other like they would be in a club. So music, ambient noises, things like that can really help out an adventure.
Yeah, go to your local Halloween store. There's a band called, they're called Vampire Syndicate, and they just make like haunted house music, it's ambient music for whatever, or Midnight Syndicate,
oh, okay.
Because they did a tie-in with 3rd edition D&D where some players' handbooks came with a CD of like,
that's cool,
Into the Caves,
Or
it was like the title track, and they're all like 3 and 4 minutes long, and they just loop.
Yeah.
But,
I mean, and if you have like a subscription to Spotify or something like that, there are plenty of playlists for like epic music or for, ambient music and things like that.
Yeah.
So music can definitely play on your characters to sort of amp them up and get them hyped for what's coming up.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, these are a couple of just tools that you can use. The biggest one that I would recommend is just coming up with a solid world. A world that you would want to visit.
Like,
you want to create something that you would have fun playing with if you were a character.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, it's easy to come up with kind of a bland thing of like, oh, the elves don't like the dwarves, so there's a thing there.
Thanks, Tolkien.
Yeah. it's also really nice to have multiple conflicts.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can have one thing of like, oh, these crops aren't growing in this one location. That's really weird. Or all of the water in this one area fogs up during a full moon. Yeah. And have, like, multiple areas that are interesting and have a understanding of where it goes. You don't have to make a detailed, like, list of what happens at each location, but you can have multiple locations where there are interesting things and see which one the character bites for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you characters can come up with a variety of different reactions to things, too.
Yeah. Like, and they can make their own trouble.
Well, and with your situation of say, a drought going on outside of a town.
Yeah.
Oh no, there's orcs attacking the town. Why are they attacking the town? Well, they're probably looking for food. So you can have them go out and kill the goblin raiders.
Yeah.
Or maybe a character goes, I'm a druid. I'm going to go see if I can start some peace talks and maybe get these people trading. Boom, they've impacted your world. Now this one outpost gets along with the goblins. So they're probably going to be tougher in the future for outsiders to come in because they've got goblin protection now.
Yeah.
They've got some allies. So you can just shake up the world with things that your characters do.
Yeah, because it's, I will say, the many times that I've played with you, everybody, I'm always surprised at the reactions or the decisions that people make that I had no idea. I remember... you guys were on, like, a floating fortress, and you guys were in, like, a bunk area, and these invisible people were coming, and your wife ended up grabbing a bunch of sheets and throwing them on them.
No, she took paint.
Oh, paint.
They were in, we were in, an inventory or supply thing.
A
fortress, and, yeah, she grabbed paint and threw it at these things that were invisible.
Yeah. Because I had the location. I knew that they were in this, like, inventory place. But, like, I never thought to connect paint with invisible people. And I was like, okay, that works.
Okay, yeah. Okay, they are not invisible anymore. You can see them.
Yeah, and it's really interesting to sort of see your players figure out things that you never thought.
Yeah.
And it's really good to go with that flow. You don't really want to say, no, that doesn't work.
Yeah.
Because it makes that player feel like, oh, I was super clever there, but
yeah,
nothing happened, so why should I be clever again? And it kind of just takes away from that moment of awesomeness.
Exactly.
Like, you want your characters to have that moment of awesomeness versus you beating up on the characters.
Yeah.
Because your ultimate goal isn't to kill everybody.
Yeah.
Like, if you're a DM and you're going in there as, like, let me kill these guys, you're not doing it right.
Which, I mean, for some reason, I mean, there is a stereotype. I know why the stereotype is there, is because of second edition, the way the rules were written, there's kind of an antagonistic relationship in the early days between the games master and the players.
Where, like, you're trying to compete with each other.
Yeah.
And you're not.
You're not. Like, it's moved past that at this point, I would say. I think part of that is probably people, because the way that first edition D&D, or original D&D, the very first iteration was set up to be run, is that Gygax would kind of make himself, like, hide behind a curtain, almost, so the players couldn't see him or judge his reaction.
Yeah.
And he would describe the things, roll for them for their skill checks, and he would ask them what their bonus for something was, and he would tell them the outcome. Because odd-shaped dice were not in very high demand. So I can see a lot of people aping that style and being, oh, I'm this unseen god force. I'm supposed to be out to get these characters.
Yeah.
So,
and on the flip side is, you know, you do want to give your players a challenge because, you know, when your players overcome a challenge, it builds that relationship amongst your players because, you know, you guys had to figure something out and beat this one challenge.
Yeah.
But another tool to use is sometimes as a DM, you have to... how do I say this? You have to hold back some of your punches. Like, sometimes if you see that your players are getting beaten up and you roll that crit...
Sometimes you fudge. Fudging
sometimes
is just...
you fudge.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I know, you know, you're trying to give a hard experience for your characters. And there might be, if your group is like a hardcore, we've played D&D every week, I know the book forwards and back, sure. Maybe you want to give them that hard challenge and there's consequences. You do kill their character. But if you're on more of a casual sort of deal where like these are your friends that play occasionally, you might want to throw some, or, you know, throw some fake punches.
Yeah, I mean, but you can only really do that if you're rolling behind a screen or else where you're not sitting at the same table. Because I know before, like, we've played games with Gamma World where Richard, the previous co-host, was first
the
time
guy
playing,
I ate.
The first time playing a role-playing game, Gamma World.
Yeah.
And I was running that game and I was rolling in the open. There was no way for me to hide that I rolled 2 20s in a row.
Yeah.
And so his character died. He made another one and it was cool.
Yeah.
But
and that's the thing. It's a suggestion. It's not like a definite thing. It's more if you are new to this and your players are new to this, you might want to go a little easy on them. But again, if you guys, you know, have played before, you know the rules back and forth, you're okay with things being hardcore, people dying, go for it. I mean, again, it's the way that your group wants to play. If your group, you know, are more casual, but if your group's more hardcore, then go for it. Really, you're catering towards their entertainment.
Yeah. I mean, I would always say to kind of incentivize behaviors that you want to see. Some systems have this built into it, like Burning Wheel.
Yeah.
You get extra... So, you get beneficial dice in Burning Wheel by doing things like role-playing certain aspects...
Mm-hmm.
Playing against certain aspects, things like that. And so it really incentivizes characters to always be pushing against who they think their character is because they get rewarded for it.
Yeah, and D&D does it too with inspiration dice.
Yeah, with inspiration dice, Savage Worlds uses bennies. It incentivizes your characters to continue playing in a certain way.
Yeah.
If you just never give them any... advantage or any inspiration or fate die or persona die or whatever the system calls it, there's not a whole lot of investment from them.
Yeah.
Because they don't know... Because, you know, players... I know I wouldn't know what to expect if the DM never gave an indication of what they wanted out of players. Like, do you want to see more role play? Like, do you want me to start pissing people off and starting fights?
Yeah.
Like, what do you want out of the story? Because,
again, everybody's just trying to have a good time.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, because as the player, you don't really want to, like, piss off the DM.
Yeah.
Because the DM might realize, hey, this isn't fun. I don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah.
And then you're out of a game.
Yeah.
Yeah. It really, everybody's just trying to have fun because it's a fun activity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's all I have right now. Did you have any suggestions for systems for people to check out? Or did you want to talk about LARPing? Because I've never
LARPed. Oh, okay. So there's storytelling, which is, or storytellers, which is the LARPer's, DM. I've never actually been a storyteller. It's super difficult for them because they have to, like, walk around and make sure that everybody's on the up and up and doing everything right because buffer weapons and spells and things like that.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to give a shout out saying That's difficult right there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And for anyone who doesn't know, LARPing is live action role-playing. Yeah. You're actually playing at your character, usually at a physical event.
Yeah.
And
you'll usually have a weapon that's coated in, like, foam and stuff, so you can hit somebody without actually hurting that person.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mainly, I guess, the biggest two systems that I can think of if you want to start off DMing would probably be D&D 5th Edition and Pathfinder. And then I would also recommend starting off with a module, just so you don't have to come up with something. And you can see if you like DMing and see if that's something that you enjoy.
Yeah, because 5th Edition, every year, they have their big book release, which the last one I bought was, Rage of Demons, Rage of the Abyss, which I still want to play through.
Yeah,
I
think that would be fun.
But, you know, before then, they had Ice Giants, Thunder, Storm King's Thunder.
Yeah,
they've always got a themed book that they release. I think Tales from the Yawning Portal was one where it actually combined... It brought in a bunch of different modules that had been previously published. So, like, Sunless Citadel, Forge of Fury, Tales from White Plume Mountain from back in 2nd Edition.
Wow.
They updated them to fit all these things to 5th Edition.
Nice, yeah. So there's a lot out there for, you know, what universe or style you want. And then after doing a couple of modules, if you have a couple friends who want to meet like every other week is usually a good thing, or if they are dedicated and have the free time, sometimes you can do every week. But then you can start creating your own world and coming up with different styles depending on your player styles and have a fun time.
Yeah.
I mean, the biggest takeaway is everybody there is trying to have a fun time. You're there to have a good time. You're there to just make some memories, have some good laughs, and enjoy the people that you're around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So on that note, I guess we will be back next week.
Next week.
In the meantime, you can reach us at backrowsupershow@gmail.com or on Facebook.
Yeah, that's Backrow Super Show.
All four words.
Yeah. And then we're also having a we are having a bracket.
Yes. So
come on to our
vote early, vote often.
Yeah. You can go to the Facebook group, and it's going to be two characters or IPs or something like that.
Yeah.
And you can vote for which one you prefer over the other one, or which one would win in a fight or something like that. Yeah. You can justify your own reason.
Yeah, it's just going to be a Facebook poll. You'll just vote.
Yeah.
And
then if you participate in the vote, you're going to be entered into
a random drawing.
Yeah.
So if you participate, follow us, or subscribe, we'll enter you into the drawing, and then we'll send you the super secret prize, which we'll discuss later. Maybe we'll even do a dedicated, once it's done, show detailing the brackets.
Yeah, I think that would be fun.
It'd
sort of talk about our expectation, like who I thought would win versus, you know, what actually won. I think that would be cool.
Okay, yeah. But yeah, our next regular show should be One Punch Man.
One Punch!
So that's what we'll be talking about next time.
It's on Netflix. It's a good series, so definitely watch it before you listen.
Yeah. So there'll probably be a me in between this one and One Punch Man, but maybe not, depending on the way the release schedule comes out. But yeah, the next regular show will be on One Punch Man. So follow that, watch it, and we'll be back next time.
Yeah, see you next week.
All right, bye. And I know